This approach is implicit in what we have just seen. Once granted that children are incapable of sin, the door is wide open to redefining sin for adults and defending the absence of sin in anyone except, quotes, a fully mature person. Every writer who opposes early sacramental confession takes this approach, though not always in the same form, and generally interleaved with other, less embarrassing arguments. Three stages to the argument are discernible. First, the church is criticized for having too long cultivated a legalistic concept of morals. Then the new morality is expanded. And finally, the matter is applied to one practical aspect of the issue, namely, children's confessions. I trust you gather by now, and I hope you will be convinced by the time I'm finished that this matter of children's confessions has really very little to do with children's confessions. It has everything to do with what is Christian morality. The church's legalism has become a familiar target for situation ethicians. It is almost the main object of criticism for those who believe that Catholic morality needs a complete overhauling. In the past, I'm quoting now, training in morality had its basic orientation in the law, the Ten Commandments of God, and the precepts of the church. If there was a moral question, the thing to ask was, what does the law say? Previously, Catholics pictured the church as having the answers to all questions, a bulwark of security in a changing world. But the Catholic Church today acknowledges that it doesn't have the answers. Unfortunately, many Catholics, unknowingly perhaps, might prefer to pattern their action on the example of the 19th century English intellectual who, it was said, liked to read at breakfast each morning a new papal decree. He had his marching orders for the day. So much for the past. It had its value, perhaps, but things have radically changed. And in one diocese after another, the teachers of religion are subjected to re-education. The change has taken place so rapidly that some are still unaware of what happened. Instead of security, Catholics are now expected to take risks. And instead of the comforting assurance that what the church teaches is right, they must now learn from each set of circumstances what they are supposed to do. Formerly, Catholics thought the church had stable principles of morality. and certain unchangeable prescriptions of the divine law. They should know better now. I quote, "It is important to realize that although the Church has definitely spoken out on moral matters, it has never done so in an irrevocable way." Unquote. The only way out of the dilemma, Catholics are told, is to rely on their conscience. Their own judgment of each situation as it comes up, not objective norms, either as founded on the moral order or as taught by the Church, but each person's own judgment of each situation is his only true norm of morality. What about the Church? Has it no place anymore to enlighten the conscience of a Catholic? Well, it can advise. It may recommend. It should never prescribe. After all this prelude, the critics come to children's confessions. They fully subscribe to the statements previously quoted about a premoral conscience. That is, in normal persons, not before the age of puberty. But they go further in their own low estimate of a child's ethical outlook. A child is simply a religious. Quote, "Because the young child tends to think of morality in terms of fear and punishment, it is unwise to identify moral demands with God's will for him." What then? He should be taught to obey and conform because the parents want him to, not because God does. Unquote. If this seems like a reversal of historic Christian teaching, it is. The young mind is assumed to be without capacity for higher than stimulus, response, activity, and certainly not equipped for making any decisions in a moral order from which the Church is excluded on principle as divinely authorized preceptor and much less infallible guide. The path is cleared then for the obvious conclusion. Children are not ready for confession until well into adolescence. Why not? Because they are not prepared to cope with the new concept of morality. In other words, I quote, "The average child is not capable of the kind of thinking necessary to make a personal and relevant confession." Unquote. Certainly, if Catholics in the future cannot look to the Church for the kind of moral guidance the faithful had received in the past, it would be naive to expect children to qualify for confession. My question is, how many adults would qualify under the same conditions. I trust you don't think I'm being too analytic, theologically, in getting behind the scenes of the confusion in Catholic morality in the Church today. What I am sharing with you, and I trust not unintelligibly, is the reason for the confusion. The third area of reflection, at the age of mortal sin, still consistent with the new findings of psychology, that children are incapable of moral wrong, many advocates of late confession argue from duty to practice. Since no one is divinely obliged to confess unless he has sinned gravely, children should not be expected to receive the sacrament until the age when, presumably, they may have committed serious sin. Is the logic clear? Once the kind of maturity is reached, when a child, no longer a child, can sin at all, the presumption is it is then able to commit grave sin. Those who take this position fully subscribe to the claims of behaviorist experimenters that true conceptual judgment comes only with adolescence. They are even willing to admit that some children might profitably receive sacramental absolution. And absolutely speaking, I quote, the child has a right to the sacrament, which God has instituted as a sign of reconciliation. But after this apparently generous concession to liberty, a child might be reluctantly allowed to go to confession. We are not prepared for what follows. A subtle integration of the most extreme form of ethical personalism with the practical discouragement of confession before the age of puberty. The value of a close analysis of this integration is heightened by the fact that these ideas have been incorporated into more than one textbook religion series used in the United States. Unlike other critics who deny that children can sin at all, some writers who oppose children's confessions admit that they can sin, but they should not accept as a rare privilege receive sacramental absolution. Why not? Without dwelling on other reasons, two of them are concerned with the ill effects of early confession. Subconscious resentment and psychological danger are attributed to the practice. With no room left for avoiding these consequences by other means than simply cutting the children off from the sacrament. Two other objections suggest that children will get false ideas about having to confess every time they receive the Eucharist. Either they lack the requisite dispositions to profit from confessions of devotion. However, these are minor objections. The main thrust is also the main issue that I wish to share with you in these two lectures. The real objection is not a pastoral one, implied by giving children a chance to grow up before subjecting them to the, quotes, tribunal of penance, unquote. The real issue at stake is the fundamental one of what constitutes sin. It is not coincidental that the authors being analyzed are mightily concerned with mortal sin. They should be. Depending on how a mortal offense against God is understood, will determine the correct instruction for the sacrament instituted by Christ to remit grave sin. If this sin, grave sin, is still defined as Catholic Christianity has always conceived it, no revolutionary change need be made in preparing the faithful for confession, whether pedagogically or chronologically. But if, and this is an important hypothesis, if grave sin is no longer what the Church believed it to be, then great changes are needed and even demanded, not only on the optimum age for first confession, but in the very essence of Christian morals and sacramental practice. For centuries, the Church's catechetical practice has been to teach that a person commits a mortal sin when the action he performs involves, first, serious matter, secondly, about which he has sufficiently deliberated with his mind, and thirdly, to which he gave complete consent of the will. However, as a growing number of Latter-day moralists see it, not a few on the faculties of our Catholic seminaries, this notion is historically interesting, and for some traditionalists may be useful. But for those who read the direction that Western morality is taking, it is quite out of date. In the definition we have just given, the operative term is the first of the three, namely, serious matter. Such sins as adultery and murder, blasphemy and fornication have been considered serious, and anyone who deliberately and with full consent did these things was said to have sinned grievously. But not anymore. Instead of grave matter, which I have underlined in my manuscript, matter. Instead of grave matter, the language to be used is total commitment. And the word commitment is to be italicized. And instead of saying that a person sins by committing a grave misdeed, we should say he is guilty of a misintention. In more prosaic words, what constitutes sin, so we are told, is essentially not what a person does, but why he does it. He therefore sins gravely if he does, not because he breaks a serious law of God, but because he fails in adequate love. The essence of sin on these premises shifts from the objective out there to the subjective inside. And from having done a wrong action to having acted from an unworthy motive. At this point, some careful distinctions are called for. Otherwise, this grave issue being discussed may be obscured. Let us first recognize what needs saying. There is a stress in our day on personal freedom and the role of the individual conscience in moral matters. A balanced personalism is revealed in the documents of the Second Vatican Council and the pedagogy of teaching morals and the sacraments ought to reflect this perspective. Thus, in teaching the laws of God, due attention should be given to the love that inspires their observance and the interior dispositions that should animate those who are God's children. But what we are talking about here is not a renewed and correct stress on personal responsibility that so many parents are anguishing over because of what their children are learning in some nominally Catholic classrooms. It is the myth of a new morality. As the new morality defines sin, its essence is uniquely in the intention. It is not, as historic Catholicism teaches, equally in the action, what is done, in the circumstances, how it is done, and in the intention, why it is done. No wonder the same writers who so redefine sin also favor contraception, abortion, and the disability of marriage with perfect logic. Follows naturally, since most people who practice contraception, abort, or divorce and remarry could honestly say their motives are good, and certainly their intentions are not openly to defy God or simply reject the Creator. They could easily excuse themselves not only after an abortion or adultery, but in the very act itself. Of course, in the language of historic Catholicism, what they were doing is considered a grave sin. But the reason why they were doing it is or can be very noble, like protecting the reputation of an unwed mother or giving consolation to an estranged wife. If all of this seems far removed from the age for first confession, it is not. It is the heart of the matter. As anyone who familiarizes himself with current writing on the subject can verify, and as anyone who knows what is going on inside not a few reputedly Catholic institutions can sadly testify. Thank you for listening.
This tape was produced by Select Religious Recordings. All rights are reserved. Duplication or transcription in any form is strictly prohibited.